So hey there, and welcome to episode 128 of the Movement and Mindfulness podcast. I'm Erica, and today we are going to be talking about the lies that keep you stuck. They're kind of like the lies we tell ourselves, but we haven't come up with them. So it is our responsibility now to kind of like get around them. But we're going to be talking about what they are right after this. Hi, and welcome to the Movement and Mindfulness podcast with me, Erica Webb of Erica Webb Yoga and Pilates. In this podcast, I, along with my guests, will explore what it means to move as an act of self-kindness and self-discovery. We'll look at the ways movement, mindset, and mindfulness support us to be and do the things we so desire in the world. I truly believe that movement has the ability to expand our capacity to show up for the things that are important to us. And I'm here to help you embrace the idea of movement as a powerful tool for wellness, rather than just another thing you think you should be doing. I'm thrilled you're here. Let's do this. So, hello, friends. Thank you so much again for joining me. Last week, I wanted to just start by saying thank you, because last week I kind of at the end of the podcast said, hey, let me know if you're listening. I would love to know. And a few of you did, and I love it. So thank you so very much. It made my day, it made my week. So thank you. So today I thought we could talk a little bit about some of the lies that keep us stuck. I don't think any of these lies are going to come as like a shock to you. I think that you will be like, of course, I know about this. But there's going to be an invitation in here to really think about what we do with them. Like, what do we do with the knowledge that, you know, we know these are like lies that are potentially keeping us stuck? Because there's a really big difference between kind of knowing something, having that intellectual understanding, and doing something with it. And I am, you know, this is a conversation that I'm having with myself as much as I'm having with you, because sometimes we can see these things, but the kind of like actioning part feels messy and complicated. So we're going to talk through that together. I saw this post during the week on Instagram in somebody's stories that made me laugh kind of like more than it probably should. And it sort of sets the tone for what we're going to talk about. So I'm going to read it out. Hopefully you find it as it's like funny, but in a sad kind of funny way. So I'm going to read it out. This was posted by somebody, not anyone I know. It was at technically Ron was their username. And they said, remember at school when you would press demo on the electric piano and pretend you were really playing it? Well, that's what adulthood is, but all the time and in every situation. And like, I laughed so hard at that, because you remember when we're kids and we think, oh, like adults know what they're doing. You know, everything will be fine because the adults know what they're doing. And then you become an adult and you're like, oh man, wow, I was wrong. I was misguided. I still don't know what I'm doing, and I'm an adult and I'm supposed to be in charge. It sort of brought that up for me, this like recognition that like we're all human adults just trying to still figure it out, right? So I think that it's a good intro to our discussion today, because I think sometimes we can come to believe that we're the only one who feels like that. Like, we're the only one who, like, everybody else seems to have this figured out. Why am I still flailing? And I said flailing, not failing, but it might feel like either. It can feel like everybody else has got it figured out, and we're the ones kind of like suffering in the background trying to figure out how to do this adult human life properly. So what if we all feel like that to some extent and on some level? And I think it speaks to this idea that there are no clear sets of rules or instructions. The human desire for sort of certainty and like just show me the right way can sometimes get in the way of us understanding that there's always contradictions. There's always nuance. There's always this sort of both and. Two things can be simultaneously true. That's our reality. And yet, you know, we're going to talk about these lies that kind of keep us stuck. They presuppose that the opposite is true, that there is certainty, that there is one way, that there is a set of rules, that there is no nuance. And that's just not true. And so like the first step to dismantling these lies is going to be in the recognition that there can't be one set of rules that follow, you know, that kind of applies to every situation. And yet we hold ourselves to standards and to ways of being that make the, you know, underlying assumption that that is how it is, right? That there's one way, that there's one set of rules, that there's everybody else is getting it right and we are getting it wrong. Now, of course, you know, I want to tie this into a movement practice, a mindfulness practice, a like navigating life practice. I sort of see them all as being like very intertwined and one and the same thing to some extent. So we're going to do that, but you could apply these ideas to anything, whether it's your movement practice or mindfulness practice or just kind of like getting through the day. So some of these lies that we're going to talk about, I've kind of like written a little list, and I think you could probably expand upon it as we start talking about them. I think it'll bring up other ideas. But some of these ideas might be things like that doing less is bad. So we're on the yoga mat, we're really tired, and we think, I don't even want to do that next pose. I just want to lie down. And we have this underlying belief, which is a lie, that it is bad or wrong or lazy or less than to do less. And that that is like a hard and fast rule. Now, as you hear me say this, you might be like, I intellectually understand that that isn't true. But when it comes to the actual doing, how easy or challenging do you find to put it into practice? That's where it's like, yeah, I hear you. I see this. This is absolutely true for me. I am not particularly adept at resting. I am a very like keep moving, keep doing kind of person. And I know that doing less isn't bad. But when it comes to actually doing less, sometimes that, you know, inner lie, that belief that is sitting there under the surface prevents me from doing what I intellectually know and understand is wise and kind. And so that's where this kind of like knowing and doing can be very different things. Asking for help, we see that as being a sign of weakness. And I say that we see that as being a sign of weakness as a very general sweeping statement. I think we're starting to understand that it's not, but what does it feel like when you do it? Sharing your struggles, that can feel, you know, wrong or vulnerable or like it somehow makes you less than. Taking the easier option on your yoga mat, is it weak? Does it mean that you don't push yourself enough? Does it mean that you're soft? All of these things can come up for us. Same thing with using props, right? For some reason, there is this belief out there that using a prop to be able to make something feel more, you know, possible for you, more accessible for you, to explore it in a different way is like somehow cheating. False. It is not. Saying no is selfish. Saying no to a movement in a class is somehow not your prerogative. All of these like lies will keep us stuck if we don't give ourselves the space to question them and then actually move beyond them. And here's the kicker. The moving beyond them part is uncomfortable. Like I was sort of saying with that example of like doing less is bad. If that is kind of like the belief that sits underneath, then when we're faced with a slow yoga class and we're used to a quicker one, or we have 15 minutes instead of 60, but we still want to move, it will stop us, if we truly believe it, it will stop us from possibly doing it at all, or we'll do it and we'll feel like somehow it wasn't enough. And I think that when I say like these lies will keep you stuck, what do I mean by stuck? I think sometimes that stuckness might feel like not sort of moving towards what you want. So if it's a sustainable, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Consistent. So if it's a sustainable and consistent movement practice that you're looking for, then, you know, believing that less is bad, asking for support is weak, sharing where you're struggling is wrong, taking the easier option is no good, using props is bad, all of these things, they will get in the way of you creating a sustainable and consistent movement practice, because those things are necessary for a sustainable and consistent movement practice. The other way that they can keep you stuck is in believing that you're wrong, right? So maybe you do it, but you don't, you it's hard to get past the belief. And so you sort of stay stuck in this feeling of like, oh, well, I'm wrong and I'm bad. And we get into that shame and that guilt cycle. Now, one of the reasons that I love a movement practice, beyond the physical benefits, because, you know, I could get into the physical benefits of movement practice. We could talk about that all day if we wanted to. But one of the other reasons that I love a movement practice is that it creates this like playground where we can play with these things, where they maybe don't feel like they have as high a stakes as they might do somewhere else. And so, you know, we can play with like, well, what would happen if I used a little less effort here? What does it feel like? We have to prove that these things are safe for us to feel confident in doing them again. And the only way that we prove that they're safe is by doing them, right? And when I say safe, it's not like that sort of danger of, you know, hurting yourself or danger of like actual physical harm. It's more, you know, sometimes that mental fear can make it feel like doing the thing isn't safe. And the only way that we can kind of prove that wrong is by doing it. And so sometimes there is, there is a level of discomfort in that. But when the playground is a safe one, right, like where the playground is this yoga mat and you're playing with these ideas and you're getting curious, I think, and I've found in my experience, that that's like a more palatable playground sometimes, right? Like life is kind of like this big kind of opportunity for this, but the yoga mat presents a kind of like more confined space and like a defined timeline too. So, you know, maybe you play with this idea for 30 minutes and then you move on. And the benefits of that will follow you off your yoga mat every single time, whether you sort of try or not. But I think when we give ourselves the space to be like, oh yeah, I see here the lie in my head. And they're not our lies, right? These are not things that we've just kind of come up with and decided to hold true. These are things that we have picked up over a lifetime. These are things that we have been told as a member of a society and as a member of a culture that we are a part of. And so, you know, I think I've told this story before, that one of the gyms that I used to go to practice yoga had a big saying on the wall that said, pain is weakness leaving the body. You know, those messages, we hear them, whether we consciously say, yes, I believe that, or whether it's kind of just filtering into our mind over a lifetime. We hear these things all the time, you know, no pain, no gain, rest is for the weak, I'll sleep when I'm dead. All of these sorts of things give us this message that all of those things, taking it easier, doing less, being kind, asking for help, all of these things somehow mean that we are weak or less than or bad or not doing enough. You know, how many of us walk around feeling all the time like we haven't done enough? Go to bed thinking, oh, I didn't do enough today. Get off the yoga mat, oh, that was good, but I didn't do enough. That's exhausting. Like, I'm exhausted just thinking about it. And I feel that way too. You know, I've always got a list of things to do that is longer than the day. And part of it is learning to, like, take these lies that are in our head through no fault of our own, ultimately. But recognizing that we have responsibility now to disassemble them and to figure out, like, what is it that actually is going to work for me? And what is it that allows me to feel about myself something that is kinder and gentler and full of compassion? And I think that part of this is getting back into contact with what is true for us at any given moment and noticing how we feel. So if we loop back around to this idea that, you know, we like certainty as humans, we like to know what's happening. We like to know what the right answer is. We want to just like, just tell me how to do it and I'll do it. And then we find out that, hey, A, you know, if we go back to that quote about the electric piano on demo and just pretending that you're playing along, there is no one right answer. And that's why so many of us feel like we're flailing around, because, you know, it requires us to be in touch with what is true for us. And that isn't always a comfortable place to be, because we are not taught to do that, right? We're just not. So part of this process is getting back in contact with what we feel and sense and notice. And part of that is paying attention, right? One of my friends, Jordana, who was on the podcast a little while ago, posted the other day about, you know, listening to your body is a useless concept unless we first know how to pay attention. And that is the first step, right? Like, how do we pay attention to how we feel? And sometimes those lies will be the thing that gets in the way of us being able to pay attention, because we're paying far more attention to like, oh, but I got to be doing it this way. And I feel so guilty because I didn't do enough and all of that sort of stuff. So how do we shift the attention to how we feel? And the only answer I have for you around that is practice, is just showing up for ourselves time and time again. We cannot always choose our thoughts, but we can choose where we place our attention. And so, you know, we might have to do it a million times in like a 30-second block, coming back to just noticing, you know, what is true for me today? How do I feel? How does what I choose to do impact on that feeling state? And the goal isn't always to feel, you know, amazing, because that is an unrealistic goal. But the goal is to be in response to what we notice about ourselves. And so some days, you know, this idea that doing less is bad, that's always going to be false, right? Like, doing less is bad is just too binary. It's too too black and white. But there will be days where, in paying attention to ourselves and connecting to the way that we feel, doing less doesn't serve us, right? In that moment, you know, maybe it's a movement, maybe it's a to-do list, maybe it's whatever. I don't know. It could be literally anything. But let's take it to the yoga mat and say, you know, you're doing this practice and you're like, you know, I've got energy, I feel strong. Maybe that day doing less isn't the, you know, the right answer to meet you where you are. But the next day you have a bad sleep and, you know, or a poor sleep, and you're stressed because you got a phone call about a family member's health, and, you know, you show up for this practice and it's intense, and you're like, I don't have the capacity for this today. Is doing less bad, or is doing less actually the most unbelievably kind and wonderful thing that you could do for yourself? So there is no absolutes. There are no absolutes. There is no black and white. There is no kind of just this or that. It is always going to be both and. It is always going to be nuanced. It is always going to be full of contradictions, because that is what we are as humans. So I hope that, you know, that gives you permission to be with yourself. Right? It's not always comfortable. I get that. But use your movement practice as this space to play with that awareness, to play with that connection, and to see how some of these lies, again, you didn't come up with them, but they're in there, to see how they might be affecting your capacity to move towards what it is that you want in terms of the practice that you want, how you want that practice to support you to feel. One of the things that I think comes up the most amongst my clients, and clients kind of in general, and people in general around the world, is that consistency piece, you know, actually just showing up for ourselves. And I think a lot of it comes back to these lies of like, it has to look a certain way. It has to be for a certain amount of time. I'm only good if I show up for this. Or, you know, you could literally think of any kind of reason that we might come up with, and they all come back to these ideas that there is weakness or not enoughness in doing what we can if it doesn't match up to the standards that we've kind of decided make it real or enough. And so, you know, if we start to break down these lies and we're like, well, you know, what actually meets me, what actually serves me today, then 5 minutes suddenly doesn't seem like a bad thing, right? 5 minutes is suddenly a gift rather than not enough. And we start to be able to flip the script a little bit to being that, you know, resting isn't soft, doing less isn't weak. It's actually me choosing to meet myself today. And I know what supports me to meet myself because I'm paying attention. I'm paying attention to how I feel. I'm paying attention to how what I choose to do in response to that changes how I feel, or, you know, feels in the moment. And then we start to realize that there's no formula. Like, there's no one right way. There's no, like, shortcut to this. It's just dialogue. It's a constant dialogue with ourselves, body and mind. And, you know, I think we've talked about this before, that that can either be like, oh, man, this is work forever. Or it can be like, wow, okay, I can stop looking for the perfect set of rules. And I can allow myself to be present to what is true for me on any given day. All right. I thought this was going to be just a few minutes. 20 minutes is a good length. So I hope that's helpful. I'd love to know if there's any other sort of like lies that you notice pop up. And if you are up for sharing them with me, come on over and find me. On Instagram is usually the best place. I'm at Erica Webb Yoga over there. Or you can email me, erica@ericawebbyoga.com.au. I would love, as always, to hear from you. I hope that whatever the week holds and, you know, wherever you are in the world, I hope you are, you know, setting out to treat yourself with kindness and compassion and curiosity in the week ahead. Thanks again for tuning in. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much for joining me for this episode of the Movement and Mindfulness podcast. I hope you loved it. And if you did, maybe share it with a friend who would love it too. And I'd also be so grateful if you'd take the time to subscribe, rate, and review the show. It makes such a difference to get that feedback. And if you're over on social media, why not come and find me? You'll find me at Erica Webb Yoga on both Instagram and Facebook. And over on my website, you'll find access to some free resources, including free classes that will help you to move well, feel well, and most importantly, move with kindness. Over there, you'll also find more information about joining me inside the Mindful Movement Virtual Studio, which is my home of kind movement, yoga, Pilates, and somatics to help you move well, feel well, and all with kindness. Until next time, I hope you're having a great day. I'll talk to you again soon.